Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from VOA Studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Impuga, and this evening we'll look at the consequences of overstaying in power, a case for term limits in Africa. With us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, a managing editor of VOA's Africa 54. Welcome back to the show, Vincent.
As always, it's a pleasure.
You're very much welcome. And joining us is regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula, who is joining us as usual from Durban, South Africa. He is an independent political analyst. Welcome to the show, Suleiman.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yes, and as I said, we're going to be talking about the consequences of overstaying in power in Africa, a case for term limits. Across the continent, right from Sudan, where there's been a power-sharing deal struck between Sudanese military leaders and civilian groups, fearing that the alternative would be a descent into state violence and failure. We also have in Algeria, where protesters have continued to take to the streets, demanding an overhaul of the political system and the removal of Bouteflika-era officials from office ahead of eventual elections. Our gentlemen, we also have a case of Libya that is falling apart as a result of the leader having stayed in power for almost 40 years. The cases that have been across the continent. So, Vincent, is this really a case for having strict term limits on the continent?
Most certainly, because if you look across all those countries, nothing like this could have happened if we had regular elections, a transfer of power from one person to another. In all those countries, people have stayed in power for more than 20 years. Some up to, you're going to 40 years. Really, when you look at a country and you look at the population, the demographics of those countries, some of the people who are under the leadership of those people were born when those people were presidents, have grown up and had even their own children when those people are leaders. It gets to a point where it really irritates even the most tolerant of them. Mm-hmm. And as a consequence, you're seeing people go out to the streets and demand. Because again, the sad part, because even if you were to make a case for monarchies, the sad part in all these countries is that progressively people have continued to experience hardships under these leaderships. Mm-hmm. They have continued to experience human rights violations, economic hardships. This is what triggered what happened in Sudan, for example. Mm-hmm. We have continued to witness intolerance to any criticism. So it's not just that staying in power per se would necessarily maybe lead to this level of violence, but when it doesn't even do the nation any good, then it ends up becoming all about the person in power, his family, his cronies, and of course, as always, they start making arrangement for the inheritance by their own children and friends. It gets to that point where people say, enough is enough.
Suleiman, I think you do agree with that one.
100%, because, Douglas, we are in the 21st century. By now, our leaders on the continent should have appreciated that what separates civilized countries or what separates developed countries from us, the undeveloped, is the fact that with the civilized country or developed countries, they have settled the question of leadership. It is not an option to have two-term limits. Yes, there are countries which don't have, but they have set their systems, like in Germany. They know how to manage them. But otherwise, overall, in most countries, you have got term limits. And they are not an option. They are a must. They are synonymous with good governance. It means continuity. It means stability. Not only that, the developed world or the civilized world discovered a long time ago that what is the essence of leadership? Leadership is a sacrifice. You sacrifice, which means, to break it literally, you are not supposed to enjoy, because you sacrifice you give your service to the people before you serve yourself. So you cannot sacrifice forever if they understood the meaning of sacrifice.
Yeah. Mm.
And because you try to give yourself, you cannot make money, you cannot do anything because you give all your heart and soul to serve the country.
Mm-hmm.
That is why there is this perpetuity in power, because they don't understand what it is all about. Otherwise, in normal circumstances, they are saying a leader is a human being, he's not an angel. Within 5 years, he should be tired. Within 10 years, he should be given other people chance so that he can also live a good life, not that he will sacrifice forever. So I think it is high time the African leaders appreciate that what they are practicing is primitivity.
Mm-hmm.
It is being primitive to think that you can lead forever. In 21st century, people hand in government after 2 terms and they go and do other things.
Actually, you know, talking about sacrifice, I think one of the reasons why you can see most of these leaders stay in power forever is because they're not making any sacrifice. If there is a sacrifice that is being made, is to sacrifice their happiness and prosperity of the citizens of their country at the altar of their selfish personal ambitions. Mohula made reference to Germany. I lived in Germany for some years, and one thing you notice there, although they don't have the term limits, they have a free, fair, and very transparent election. When it comes to election time, every party is put under extreme pressure to really prove that it can deliver. So even when the person who is in power wins the election, when their party wins the election, remember, in Germany, it's more about the parties. Mm. It's not actually about the individual. It's not about Angela Merkel. Mm. It's about her party. If that party has been delivering, the party gets re-elected, and of course the leader of the party can continue being chancellor. But it is dependent on the performance. It's not about the person manipulating and demanding that they need to continue staying in power.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, the reason why any civilized society realizes there is a need for change in power, and that is what, even in those countries where there's no power limit, election facilitates the change, the transfer of power, is that I hope we are not losing Mohula. The reality is that however good you are, however great of a leader you are, at some point, as Mohula was mentioning, you get tired. If you're genuinely working, anybody
who
works,
even
a place where you work, you get to a point where you feel like, I've done something. But there's another reason why you have to change leadership. You need new vision at some point.
Mm-hmm.
You need somebody with a fresher view of things, a fresher perspective of everything, including the how we should progress from here, how we should develop.
Yes.
You need a little bit of new flavor in the leadership. So anybody who insists that they are the best for the country, that their vision is forever the best for the country, obviously has disdain for the millions of the other citizens of that country, and also has no regard for that sense of change and a different perspective in terms of leadership and even development. So I think it comes down to one thing: selfishness and leadership of taking rather than leadership of giving. Leadership of giving will obviously lead a person to want to step aside so that somebody else can have a chance to give to their society.
I see. Now, most people have been concerned about the day after these long-serving leaders are out of the way, either through death or whatever means, as we have seen in the recent, as we have seen in Libya, the country is torn apart. In Algeria, they have been in protest for months. Bouteflika is out of the way, but then the system remains, and the people are saying no, they are still on the streets. In Sudan, we are seeing it now. They were heard of idea of forming some arrangement between the army and the protesters, which some people may not even work. So, looking at the day after, is the Sudan-Algeria model the way to go to avoid the countries breaking apart, or is there any other way, Suleiman? Because these people have been in power for so long, they have destroyed all the systems, all the institutions are broken down. So what would be the way forward after the day after the long-serving leader has left the way?
Actually, before I go to that one, I would like to add on what my brother Vincent has just said about the selfishness. As I said, so that you come to understand it thoroughly. The way Vincent has said about the selfishness of the leadership. I mean, why should the people push you? Because after the 10 years, the statistics are there. If you are not selfish, when you started, what was the unemployment level? What was the poverty level? What was the how many roads did they have? What is the circulation of electricity? What is the education? I mean, after 10 years, a normal person can be able to ask for the report card and sees that I am moving slowly, or I have not moved, or I have stagnated. So if you have stagnated, why don't you give other people chance to try it if you are patriotic? If you are not selfish, why can't you say, I have tried my level best, but the pace at which I'm moving doesn't seem to be enough? Why shouldn't I give power? So that is why we are saying, after 10 years, as Vincent has said, you are a human being, you should be tired. Not only being tired, but the statistics are there. Even if you are fresh, the statistics should remind you what is happening. Because when you look at all these countries where the leaders have stayed for 20 years, after 10 years, it starts to decline. Everything is declining. Corruption is coming in, nepotism is coming in, unemployment is, poverty is increasing, everything is increasing. But for him, he's climbing 12 years, 13 years, 20 years. Others now are going into 40 years. So that is the extreme selfishness from these leaders we need to really hammer it home that it is unnecessary, it is injurious to the country, it is destroying the country. Back to your point, that is where we are, where we are in Algeria, that is where we are in Sudan. By after 10 years, they started to systematically destroy all the institutions. Because of the exclusiveness of this government, because of the upper-handedness of this government, the ordinary people lose confidence in every system that is connected to them. Mm-hmm. So there is no alternative. After they have overthrown you, all the systems have to be destroyed because they are fed up. It will be better after a few times. For example, in Nigeria, they gave Goodluck Jonathan only 5 years, only one term. So, no, you are not moving. We cannot see progress. Please go away. Let us try another person. Imagine if Jonathan had not gone away, the level of bitterness which he would have built within 10 years, those are 2 terms. If he decided now to add on more than 10 years, it would even be worse. Yeah. That is why we have got this impasse in Algeria, in Sudan, and then the destruction in Central African Republic, in Libya, in Somalia, where they totally collapse and everything comes upside down. So where is the way to go? I think the think tanks in Africa need to sit and find a way to avoid a system where people are forced out of power. There needs to be some thinking within the continent itself, apart from the countries themselves, but to consider forcing these leaders or trying to talk to them to live peacefully, to arrange free and fair elections so that there is a smooth transition, not a forceful one, which will lead to that one.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I just actually also wanted to build on onto that point. First, no human being is perfect. Mm-hmm. We are all actually human beings. Mm-hmm. None of us in any of our individual countries was dropped from heaven such that he is above all the other humans within that country.
True.
So every human every leader has to recognize that he's just one of us. He's a son of the soil. He came perhaps from some village, from some place. Mm. So he's not, he does not have the exclusive possession of all the wisdom and leadership qualities. In a country of millions of people, there are others who can do the job. But why, you asked, do we end up having this upheaval when there is a change, this forced change of power? For example, we have seen that in Sudan. We saw that in Algeria. We have even seen what happened in places like Egypt. You may wonder, why do we end up having a sense of upheaval and confusion? I want to give an analogy here. You see, leadership, when you are the president of a country, you're like a driver of the bus that is carrying the nation to a destination. When people stay in power for too long, they end up being like a driver who has been driving for so long, he's so tired and he's drunk. And then the passengers in that bus realize that this driver is actually taking them to a different road. Mm-hmm. It is not taking them home. It is a very suspicious place they're going. It's a bumpy road. It is kind of going into some dangerous territory. And the problem is, in that bus, you realize that man, perhaps because he's been so selfish, he ends up being the only person who has been driving and who knows how to drive, and nobody else in that bus knows how to drive. But because they sense that it's leading them to nowhere, they decide to wrestle the steering wheel from him.
Yes.
But unfortunately, they don't know how to drive because he did not allow anybody to train as a driver of the bus. As they take the wheels away from him, of course, what do you expect? The bus will be wobbling. The bus will be shaking, and at some point, there can be a threat of the bus overturning. This is what ends up happening in our countries, in that the selfishness of the leaders leads them not to prepare any of the other citizens for leadership, and at some point, they become so drunk in power, and they start leading the citizens to any direction that they only so desire, but nothing to do with a destination that the citizens of a country wish for, which is progress, development, democracy, and, of course, a much, much more brighter future.
I see. Well, for those just joining us, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we are coming to you live from VOA studios here in Washington. Tonight, we are discussing the consequences of overstaying in power, a case for term limits. Now, gentlemen, you just articulated all those issues, but then Africa has still leaders who are still hanging on to power for 30-plus years. We take a case of Uganda, for instance. Museveni has been in power for 33 years. Rwanda's Kagame is also there. And Cameroon's Paul Biya is there. Don't they, Vincent, do you think, don't they realize that tomorrow it may be their turn?
I think, as I may have mentioned it before, that I think these people end up being like in a state of stupor, drunkenness. They are almost oblivious of what's happening in their neighborhood. And in a way, they live in a delusion, a world of delusion, where they believe that these things only happen to their neighbors, that they themselves will never be touched because they are beloved by their own people, and that they're the best that can ever be produced by that country. If they allowed them to see, if they allowed them to look across the borders and see what has happened to their fellow presidents who have stayed in power for too long, obviously they'll make the necessary arrangements to have a transition in power. But again and again and again, it has proved that these leaders behave like they are delusional, they are drunk, and indeed they're drunk with power, but they're delusional and in denial until it happens to them.
Suleiman, because the examples are abound where they are still doing things they ought to have to know that won't come to any good.
Surely, Douglas. Really, we cannot fail to note that every leader who has stayed more than 10 years, he has built castles in the air. He's in dream world. we are in the 21st century. The push factor cannot be reversed. We are in a globalized world. We have had the appreciable education now. A very big number of the population now are well educated or are enlightened. They can make a comparative condition. Well, this end has said the push factors are still there, meaning their demands are there. They want jobs. They want trusted leadership. They want transparent leadership. They want inclusiveness. They want proper policies. They want equitable sharing of national resources. They know what nepotism is. They know what, the push factors are there. They cannot reverse them. What is required now is for them to wake up and make a transition to hand over power. It is now late to have elected kings in Africa. The youths have woken up. They know what they want. They can compare with other countries. So countries like Uganda, countries like Rwanda, countries like Chad, countries like Cameroon, the leadership is rusted. They are out of touch. They don't know where they are in dreamland. Soon the wave will push them away. Yet, the statistics show they are not making a dent towards what the people want. They cannot create the employment. They cannot, the leadership is no longer trusted because they have failed for so many years. They are not inclusive. They are not transparent. They are not democratic. The economies are collapsing. So if the economies are collapsing, what will refuse the people to rise up and throw them out? And so it is a question of time. They just need to wake up, Douglas. And time is running out.
One of the biggest challenges that countries that have leaders who do not believe in democratic transitions of power is that indeed this people live in their own world. Because, for example, if you ask them about the performance of their country and their leadership, they will tell you their countries are okay, they're developing well. Now, when a person who lives, who leads a country where there are still people who live in mud houses with grass-thatched roofs, where children go to school barefoot and perhaps sit in classrooms that have no windows.
Let alone chairs and desks.
When a person is leading a country where it is 50 or whatever, 55 years after independence, and you still have a big part of the country dark. I have flown across the continent of Africa, and you see countries looking black, dark at night because there's no electricity except for a few, lights you see in the major cities. Now, when a president like that sits down and tells people that he has done so much for the country, that the country is doing so well and it's moving the right direction, then you know that person is delusional or is such a sadist that he does not wish well for his people, because of course he lives in a beautiful home with electricity. Of course he eats well and his children can go to the best schools, not only in their country but anywhere in the world. Their families can go to hospitals in London, in America and wherever, or South Africa. They do not care about the rest of the citizens, and they will tell you the country is doing well for the last 25, 30 years. It's doing well. Yet, people are living in mud houses, people have no roads, people have no proper schools, there's no health care, that's why they go abroad. I mean, you tell me, how can Paul Biya tell you that he has done so much for the country when he lives in Switzerland?
Yes, throughout the year.
Can he attend a hospital in his country? Why should even why do you have an African leader taking a plane and going abroad for health care? If he cannot go to a hospital locally, what does that tell you? How can he tell you that he's doing well if he does not have a health system that is good for him and his family members? And his countrymen. How is it that he thinks he's done well when he does not have schools that are good enough for his own children? So either they're delusional, but I think for me they're sadistic and mercenary in their mindset, in that as long as they're getting what they're getting, as long as they're taking what they're taking, they really don't care.
Okay, Suleiman, 1 minute, we're running out of time. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I wanted to add on what Vincent was saying. But I wanted to say that it is not only the way he has said, not only that, as he's saying, the evidence is obvious, but they are deceiving the countries, the citizens, in open daylight. For example, let's take one country like Uganda. Recently, the president and his finance minister came up with a budget. They came up with a budget saying the budget is 40 trillion. That is the money which they expect to spend in the financial year. But their revenue, they can only get revenue of 20. Then from the 20, almost 10 is going to pay back the debts the country has taken. So already the country does not even break even. They don't have even the funds. They don't even have the funds to run the country. But when he was in his speech talking, he said Uganda has got the fastest economy. Everything is wonderful. So many things have changed. But you don't have the revenue. All the money is borrowed. And recently, the American the gentleman in charge of African affairs.
Yes.
He was recently saying that these African countries who have taken debt should know one thing. The developed countries are not going to do what they did to do HIPC again.
Yeah.
They should continue taking debts from China, but they should know they are going to pay those debts.
Yes,
they are not going to have any HIPC anymore. I think that was a clear statement.
Yes.
So this is which they are lying. The citizen, that the money is there, when it is borrowed money, it has to end, and the citizen should know.
Okay, we are out of time, Vincent. I think we shall have to pick it up from there next time, because we didn't look at the aspect of the other international community that some of them prop up these people to stay in power for as long as they do.
Yes.
Mobutu was there for decades, because he had support. Gaddafi had the same. All of them have some patrons where they steal the money and go and keep it there. Well, but unfortunately, we are out of time. And that wraps it up for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to my colleague, Vincent Makori, managing editor for VOA's Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. A reminder that in case you missed any or part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at www.voanews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, in Washington.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
You are listening to Upfront, the Voice of America.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today, because they gave me a lot of support morally.
That AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA News. I'm